We're holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. Okay, we've been talking about dinim involving truma that became tome and various angles on that. The last thing we were talking about was we've been talking about the idea, if you have tome grapes or olives of truma, is there a way to squeeze them and get juice out of it, juice or oil, as the case may be, that would actually be tahor. So we started the sugya by saying that Rabbi Yochanan had said that yes, you can squeeze them less than a kibbutz at a time. Then we said, on the other hand, Rav Chista disagreed with that because he held that when the fruit becomes tamei, the juice becomes tamei together with it. It's called the machlokes is whether mifkad pidi or is the juice considered like it's just stored in the fruit like in a container. So then when the fruit becomes tamei, the juice doesn't. Or do we say that it's mivla bli, that it's considered that it's embedded in the flesh of the fruit, and therefore when the fruit becomes tamei, automatically the juice does also. We mentioned something about if you have truma that became tame, if it's bread or it's oil, then you're allowed to use it for fire. You're allowed to use it for burning. You're allowed to use it for burning. So that shows, therefore, that we're not concerned about takala. We said in connection with the grapes and olives. We said earlier with berries and grapes that if truma that became tame, there's no way of doing anything with it. Why don't we say that you can squeeze it out less than a kibbutz, like Rabbi Yochanan says? And the answer is even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that there is a possible problem of takala that you might come to eat them. So we said, what about the bread and the oil? Why is there not a problem of takala? And we said, because what you do is, in the case of bread, you throw it into your pile of firewood, and therefore it becomes dirty, and nobody would want to eat it afterwards. And in the case of oil, you put it in a dirty keli. So now we're going to take up that point and continue discussing it. Gufa, madlikin, give me a moment, base. Madlikin b'pas or b'shemen shel truma shenitmes. You're allowed to light a fire with bread or with oil of tame that became tame. Of truma that became tame, because we said in the case of the bread, you throw it between the wood, and in the case of the oil, you put it in a klimos. But Abaya Amar Mishmei de Chizki, Abaya qualifies that in the name of Chizki, of a Rava Amar Dvei Yitzchak Dvei Rav Yitzchak Amarta, Amar of Huna, Lo Shanu Ela Pas. Now, when we say bread, we mean specifically bread, where if you throw it among the wood pile, it will become disgusting, and therefore you're allowed to do that. Avochiti loy. But if you had a similar kind of thing with wheat, then not. Because even wheat, after all, is hard and tough. Maybe it's not like chite kudenaisa, which we learned earlier in the Sefta. It's very tough, but still, a grain of wheat is hard on the outside. So even if you throw the wheat into your wood pile, it's not going to be so disgusting. It's not going to be so dirty. It's easy enough to wash it off, and use it. So then you still might come to eat it. Not out of your way. Well, first of all, in those times when they had less food, maybe you would go out of your way. But the point is, just the fact that you have it in your wood pile in and of itself is not going to make it. It's not going to make it most, and you might come to eat it. So the question is by mine. On the other hand, but Rabbi Yochanan. So that's Rav Huna. That's Rav Huna and Chizkiya are saying that no. But Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with that and says no. The same thing can apply even to wheat. So the question is by mine. Nechush Duma Osi Behem the Takala. Why aren't we concerned about Takala according to Rabbi Yochanan? The answer is Kidder Omer Rav Ashi Bishlikosa Umi Isasa, just as Rav Ashi said, as we're going to learn in a few lines, that you have a case where the wheat has been cooked, and therefore, if you throw it in the woodpile, it becomes meustik. Hachanami Bishlikosa Umi Isasa, the same thing we're talking about over here, where it's cooked, and therefore it's meustik. Rashi learns that what we're talking about is that after the wheat became tame, there's still a way around it. What you do is you take that weed of truma, which is tame, you cook it. So now it becomes disgusting. Now it's not hard like the original wheat. Now it's more like bread. Therefore, if you throw it into the wood pile, then it becomes dirty. So therefore, you have no problem. There's no problem, says Rabbi Yochanan, of that you may come to eat it. Whereas Rav Huna and Chizkiya take the view that after all, you might eat them before you cook them, or even while you're cooking them. You have it cooking on the stove over there. You may forget that it's truma tumeya and eat it. That's what. That's true, but here we're not even talking about the chametz angle of it over here. It's true that grain can become chametz, but here we're not even talking about the chametz angle. Here we're just talking about the truma tmei angle. We're talking about throughout the year. In other words, when we say madlikin bepas shel truma, we're not talking about Pesach, because Pesach chametz is also about, no, you can't light a fire with pas. No, we're talking about during the rest of the year. But anyway, so Rashi explains that we're talking about that the wheat became tamei and then you're cooking it. Tosfos says that no, we're actually talking about it would have to be that they were cooked before they became tamei, because otherwise you still have the problem that like Rashi says, everybody should agree, not just Rav Huna, that while you're cooking them, before you cook them, you might end up eating them. Anyway, so hochanami b'shlikaso miyisasa. So the same thing over here, the same answer can apply. Why would Rabbi Yochanan allow it over here? Is because it's cooked and therefore it's miyustik. So again, Rav Huna would still disagree, but Rabbi Yochanan in that case says there's no problem of takala because it's going to be cooked and therefore if you throw it into the wood pile, it'll be disgusting. Because the point is, you want to be able to keep it in the future for firewood. You don't want to, you want to be able to, this is truma tmei, you can't eat it, so you want to be able to save it for firewood. But if you save it raw, then even Rabbi Yochanan is going to agree that there's a problem because of takala, because you may come to eat it. Therefore, what you do is you cook it, and then you're allowed to keep, and then you put it into the wood pile, and now you're allowed to keep it around until you decide you need it for firewood. Yeah, maybe you're... Well, lav dafka, your wood pile is exposed to the rain and snow. I mean, the point is you want to keep your wood dry, so maybe you have it covered. But whatever, the point is just the fact that the cooked wheat is among the wood itself makes it dirty and disgusting. Okay. So, v'heche itma d'rabashi, what was the original context where Rav Ashi said what he said? Aha, it was in connection with the following. G'omer of oven barav acha omer of Yitzchak. Abba shol gabol shol beis rebi hoya. Abba shol, loved after this is the famous Tana Abba shol, it could be somebody else with the same name, but whatever it was, he was the one in charge of kneading dough in the house of Rebbe. You had in those times, nowadays we just have, you make bread at home, you mix up a batch of dough, you use machines or whatever. In those times, apparently there was a specialized, you find in other places also, there was a specialized job where a person would have the job of kneading the dough. Anyway, so Abba Shol was that in the house of Rebbe. They used to warm up for him hot water using a fire made with wheat of truma tmeya, lolosh behen is batara, and that way he would use that fire to warm up water to be able to knead dough that would be made batara. Now this is long after the churban, but still you had people, as we talked about a day or two ago, you had people who were still able to be tahor in those days. They still had leftover par aduma ashes, and Rebbe was oichol cholin batara. Even though Rebbe is not a kohen, he would eat his cholin he would make sure that his cholin were tahor. We're tahor to the level of truma. It's called cholin altaris truma, or cholin altaris hakodesh. No, so one second. So the point is, there was truma tmeya because you still had people who took truma, and inevitably sometimes it became tamei. So one second, we'll talk about how you're allowed to do that. So the point is, we're not concerned that while you're using that for firewood, you may end up that those are going to touch the dough of the dough of cholin shanasu altaris hakodesh and make them tamei. So that's the question. Amai, now why? Nechush duma asibu hulu de takola. Don't you have the problem of takola itself, that you might eat the wheat itself? So there's the original context where Rav Ashi said we're talking about that they were cooked and therefore they were disgusting. So therefore, in other words, what they did is, they had this truma tmeya. We did as they just said. According to Rashi, after it became tamei, they cooked it. According to Tosfos, it became tamei after it was cooked. Whatever the case, what we do is then we take it, we put it together with the wood pile. Now it becomes disgusting. Nobody's going to eat it, so there's no problem with takala. The chiddush of what Rav Oven Barav Acha is saying is that then they would use this for firewood when they're preparing dough, which needs to be altaras truma or altaras hakodesh, without concern that one is going to touch the other. Even the pot that he had the water inside, right? Because food can't be metam in the pot, right? the food that you that you're burning underneath it can't be metamic the pot, because food is not metamic kalim, as we learned in the first parak. Anyway, how do they come to have truma tmeya? So Tosfos argues that it would have to be this could only work if there were koyanim in Rebbe's household where they're preparing this dough for the whole household, including those koyanim. Otherwise, how is Yisrael like Rebbe allowed to use truma tmeya for firewood in the first place? On the other hand, there are other Rishonim who learn that maybe there's a difference between, we would say, that Yisrael is not allowed to feed Truma Tmeya to his animals or something, but maybe there's a special heter that he's allowed to use it for firewood, whatever, because more respectful, because there's a cost of whatever it is, even though the Ramban, I think, holds this way, even if there are no Koyanim in the household. Whatever the case, the point is that we see that Rav Ashi mentioned that concept of the wheat being cooked, and therefore now it's soft, and therefore it can easily become dirty and disgusting, and therefore they could use it for firewood, so we can apply the same thing to what Rav Yechanan said before about using wheat of Truma Tmeya for burning, because it's exactly the same kind of thing. Okay. Well, you cook it and then you dry it out, maybe, whatever the case. The point is that, okay, so now the Gemara is going to start a new discussion, also having to do with Truma, which it has to do with Truma Tmeya, so it relates to the previous discussion. But eventually, on Amud Beis, we're also going to relate it back to something that we learned before in the sugya. So the Gemara tells Abaya ba'oven v'Rabchanani ba'oven tonu trumas be'rabba. Abaya ba'oven and Rabchanani ba'oven, maybe they were brothers. They learned Masechta Trumas in the yeshiva of Rabba. And by the way, you see an interesting thing from this. Trumas is not one of the Masechtas that has Gemara Bavli. But we see that they were actually learning it in the yeshivas of Bavel. They just didn't, when Ravina and Ravashi wrote the Gemara, they chose not to write a Gemara on Trumas itself, because whatever we need to do, it's not the dinim of Masechta Trumas are not applicable outside Eretz Yisrael, and they figured whatever we need to know about the dinim in Masechta Trumas is scattered in various places in Shas, such as our sugya over here. But they were actually learning all the Masechtas. Anyway, so they learned Trumas in the yeshiva of Rabba. Pogabu Rava Bamasna. Rava Bamasna one day met up with them. Omaluhu, he says to them, "My Amritu with Trumas Devemar. What kind of chidushim have you learned regarding Trumas in the yeshiva of a great person like Rabba?" In other words, you're learning Masechta Trumas over there. You must have learned something new and exciting. So share it with me, please. Amrulei my kashalach. So they say, obviously, the way you're asking the question shows you have some kind of kasha. What is it? Let's see if we can figure it out. Amaluhu, so he says, the problem I have is this. There's a Mishnah in Trumas that says, Sile Trumas Shinitmu, plants of Truma that became Tome. It actually describes, let's say, for example, you have cabbage or leeks of Truma. Now, you have, when you plant vegetables, there are some kinds where, when you plant anything, there are some things where you plant seeds, and the seed rots away in the ground, and then the plant grows from it. That's called Dovashet Zare Kola. And then you have things like, for example, like the examples that Ashi is giving over here, cabbage or leeks or whatever. You plant the actual thing, you can replant the actual thing itself in the ground, the actual head of cabbage or the actual leek, and it will stay and it will grow larger in size. That's called Dovah She'en Zare Kola. So, if you have such plants of Truma, let's say, for example, a cabbage of Truma that became Tomei, the Shoslan, and then you replanted them back in the ground, Tohoda Militame, then they're tahor in the sense that they're not metame other food. The point is, it actually says now that they're attached to the ground, they're not considered food anymore. On the other hand, va'asurin milech ol b'truma, on the other hand, they're still also to eat as truma. Now, at this point, we assume, why are they also? We mean it's still just as also as it was before. Before it was truma tmeya and nobody could eat it, not even koyanim. Now it sounds like still koyanim can't eat it. So the question, Rava Bamasna says, my question is, well, if they're tahor in the sense that they're not metame anymore, because then being attached to the ground means they're no longer considered food, amai asurin milachol, then why are they also to eat? How are they still truma tmeya in one sense but not another? They're not truma tmeya in the sense that they can be metame other food, but they're truma tmeya in the sense that the koyanim still can't eat them. What's going on over here? Amrulei, so they said, good question. You should know, hochi amar Rabba. This is what Rabba answered. You asked what chiddush we learned in Rabba's yeshiva. Here's the chiddush we learned. My asurin, asurin mazarim. You're right. When we say these things are osur, we don't mean they're osur for kohenim to eat. The tumah in them went away. Now they're like tumah tahora again, so the kohenim can eat it. We mean it's also for zarim to eat because it's still considered tumah. The planting takes away the tumah status, but it doesn't take away the tumah status. So then the problem is, Rav Bamasna says, Umay Kamash Kulon. So in that case, then, what is the chiddush of the Mishnah? Gidule Truma Truma. The Mishnah just wants us to know this idea that Gidule Truma, that things that grow from Truma are considered like Truma, which would apply to any kind of plants, whether it's Dovash Zare Kola, like wheat, or Dovash Ein Zare Kola, like these cabbages. In that case, Tanena. Well, we already learned that in a Mishnah in that same parak, Gidule Truma Truma. So we don't need another Mishnah to tell us the same thing. So if we said, as I thought originally, that the Mishnah is telling us that Zorim are also, that even the Kohenim are also to eat it, that's a bigger Chiddush. That even though it's still attached to the ground, it's still considered Truma Tmeya. But if you're telling me all it is, it's considered Truma Tahora, that's Gidule Truma, when we already have a Mishnah that tells us that. That it's considered Truma. That it has the same status of Truma. The Chitema Gidule Gidulin. So you might say that maybe this Asurim Melechol is, remember, we're talking about Dovah She'en Zare Kola. We're talking about things that don't decay in the ground. They just keep on growing larger. And you have, you could be talking about Gidule Gidulin, growths from the growths. Meaning, Rashi describes, if you take a cabbage and replant it, and the leaves grow larger, that's considered Gidulin. Then you have, let's say you also have new leaves develop, those are considered gidule gidulin. Rashi gives another example of gidule gidulin would be, let's say, for example, you plant a bunch of small onions together, like a bunch of pearl onions, and eventually, if you leave them growing underground long enough, eventually they merge together. You know how sometimes you buy an onion in the store and you cut it open and you find it's got a double core. Yeah, so that came from that. Two onions that merged together and ended up growing new layers around them. So those new layers would be gedulei gedulin. Tosfos actually has a different definition. Gedulim would be what grows from the plant first. Then let's say you uprooted it, then you replanted it, and then more things grew from that. That would be gedulei gedulin. Whatever the case. You're going to tell me that that's the chiddush of the Mishnah that I was asking you about, that when it says asurin milechol, it does mean it's also for zorim. So the point is, we have one Mishnah that tells us gidule truma, and then this one is telling us even gidule truma. You're going to argue that's the chiddush? Can't be. Umay kamash milan. So still, what's the chiddush in it? Gedavar she'en zare kola. We're saying that that's the chiddush regarding something like cabbages or onions where they don't decay in the ground. Honami Tanena, that we also learn in a Mishnah over there in Trumas. Tevel Gidul of Mutarin. When it comes to Tevel, even though it's officially Tevel, Miruach was done, it's Chayiv and Meiser, etc. But if then instead of taking Truma and Meiser from it, you planted it, then Gidul of Mutarin, then what grows from it is Mutar. In other words, you'd be able to eat a snack from it like any other newly grown produce before Gmar Malacha and it's brought into the house. But a bedavash zare kola, that applies only if zare kola, like for example wheat, where the original seed rots away in the ground. Aval bedavash ain zare kola, but if it's something like onions, where it's not zare kola, where it keeps on growing, the same original onion keeps on growing in the ground, afila gidulin, asurin ba'achila. Then even gidulin gidulin are asur. So now, okay, that Mishnah is talking, now the point is, in other words, that, okay, with Tevel, what we're saying is it's not a matter of Truma, it's a matter of Chulin, but still, we can learn from that to Truma, The concept of gedulei truma is the rabbanon anyway. Rashi points out midaraisa, once you planted them, how can they still be considered truma? The whole concept that we're saying that zorim can't eat them is Midrabanan, and we see in the case of Tevel that there's no distinction between Gedulim and Gedula Gedulim, between the first and second growths, so the same thing should apply to Truma. So therefore, we already know that Gedula Gedulim is Osir. So again, if the original Mishnah that I'm asking you about is saying that even the Kohenim can't eat them, there's a big Chiddush in that. Even though they're planted in the ground, they're still considered Tomei. That's a big Chiddush. But if all it is telling us that Zorim can't eat it, then we already have Mishnayos to tell us in that Perek to tell us the same thing. What is this one adding? Ishtiku. So they were quiet and they couldn't think of an answer to that. Omru le midi shmi aloch baha. So then they asked Rava Bamasna, okay, we give up. We're stumped. Do you have anything about it? Maybe you heard from your Rebbeim an answer to that. Amalahu. So he answers them, yes. Hochi Amar Rav Sheshes. Yes, this is what Rav Sheshes said. My asurin asurin makoyanim. That it does mean that it's also to koyanim, but not on the grounds that it was tome. It's true. Once it's planted, the original tumah goes away. But hoyol veifsilulahu behesach hadas. But the reason is because this tumah, when you planted it, it became tome from hesach hadas. So actually, what it is Rashi explains like this: you have a mitzvah to guard truma, and that means not to have hesach hadas. Where then, as we're now going to discuss in the Gemara, that can make truma and kodshim tomei, which now we're going to have a sugya on that subject. So therefore, when they became tomei to begin with, then he was masiach das. So now they became posel, and that psul still continues to exist after they were planted. So yes, the original tumah went away, but the psul of hesach hadas still exists. The question is, hanichalam ando amah hesach hadas psul agufabi. Now we're going to have now a discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. What is the nature of the psul of hesach hadas? If you say that it's psul agufabi, if you say it's an intrinsic psul, meaning that it's not because there might have been another psul, it's a certain extra chumrah that the chachamim applied to kodshim and to truma to say that intrinsic means that it comes from itself. But in other words, you can have a psul which is because there might have been some other psul. In other words, one way of looking at it is hesach hadas could be psul because in the time when there was hesach hadas, it might have become tame and you didn't realize. That's called psul tumah habi, as the Gemara is soon going to discuss. On the other hand, you have the possibility, psul aguf habi, nothing to do. Even if you know for sure, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, even if Eliyahu now comes and tells us that it didn't in fact become tomei, just the fact that there's hesach hadas itself intrinsically is enough to be metameh. So if you say that hesach hadas is psul aguf, well then shapir, then okay, then we understand what happened over here. Even though the psul of tumah goes away when you plant this tumah, because it's planted in the ground, and as Rashi said, once it's planted in the ground, it's not considered food anymore. But then now you have a new problem of hesach hadas, so then shapir, so then it's good. Elo lamandama hesach hadas psul tumah habi. But if you say hesach hadas is only psul because it might have become tumah, my ikalamemer, then what are you going to say? What are you going to say? So why are they posel because of chashash tumah? After all, even the tumah itself, the actual tumah itself that they had, went away when he planted it. Why are you concerned about a chashash of other tumah that it may have gotten? Obviously, while it's attached, before it was in the earth. Once it's in the earth, it can't become tumah. No, that's what we're saying. If we're saying that hesach hadas is only because during the time of hesach hadas it might have become tomei, but this is already tomei, and we're saying that planting in the ground removes the vadai tumah, so surely it'll remove the suffix tumah as well. You can't say tofel chomim in ikur. You can't say that the actual tumah that it had went away, but you're still concerned about hesach hadas because of the possible tumah that it caused. How does that work? So how does Rav Sheshes' answer work according to that? De Itmar, as in fact we have a discussion about that. Hesach Hadas, when we talk about Truma or Kodshim, that they become posel as a result of Hesach Hadas, what is the nature of that psul? Rabbi Yechanan Amar Psul Tumahavi. Rabbi Yechanan says the psul is only because it might have become Tomei during that time. And therefore, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, if we had a way to know for sure that it didn't become Tomei, then it wouldn't, and then the Hesach Hadas, in fact, wouldn't be a problem. But Reb Shimon Lakish Amar P'sul HaGuf Avi. Reb Shlakish said that it's a P'sul HaGuf, that it's an intrinsic, it's a freestanding soul of its own, nothing to do with what else might have happened. Just the fact that there was Hesach Hadas alone is reason enough to say that it's no good. Meaning, what's the type that out into practical terms? Reb Yechanan Amar P'sul Truma Habi Shem Yove Eliyahu V'Taharena Shemin Loi. Even if Eliyahu HaNavi were to come and tell us that it is Torah, now we can't. When Eliyahu HaNavi comes, we can't say that he can decide halacha for us. Torah Leva Shemayim. But what he can do is he can tell us the facts. In this case, it's a factual question. Did it become Tomei during that time of Hesach Hadas? Factual questions we can ask Eliyahu HaNavi for. So there's a question, right, you're talking about, so there is actually, when we talk about Yahweh Eliyahu, we don't mean when he comes before Mashiach. We're talking about just nowadays, if he comes as a neshama only. Where there you have, where, you know, there we still say turtle of it. Right, when he comes to earth, when Eliyahu HaNavi comes to earth, for example, right before Mashiach comes, and he comes as a neshama beguf, yeah, then he's like any of the other chachamim, then he can give his opinion in halacha like any of the other chachamim, but then, fine, you know, then he's just doing it in his capacity as a chacham. But here we're talking about his capacity as a Navi, and his capacity as a neshama that's able to see anything. So Torah halacha we can't accept in that capacity, because Torah Leib HaShemayimi, because Torah Leib HaShemayimi, so it has to be, so it can only be that he's telling us, is the thing in fact Tomei? That we could accept from him. So Rabbi Yechanan would say, Shein Yaveh Eliyahu V'Taharena, Shemin Loi, we will listen to him and we will accept that it is Tahar. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, I'm a P'sul HaGuf Avi, Rabbi Shimon Lakish says that Hesach Hadas is an intrinsic P'sul in the sense, Shein Yaveh Eliyahu V'Taharena, Ein Shemin Loi. Even if Eliyahu comes and tells us it didn't become Tomei during that time of Hesach Hadas, it's not going to help us. It's not going to help us because we're going to tell him, very nice, thank you, Eliyahu, for telling us it wasn't Tomei, but the fact is there was Hesach Hadas, and that all by itself is able to make it possible. Actually, Tosfos asked the question, at the end of the first perek, we had the case where there was a barrel of Truma that became Sofik Tomei, and we discussed that according to Rabbi Yeshua, we said you can put it out in an open area, if until now it was indoors, for example, you can put it outdoors, in order that eventually maybe it'll become Vadei Tomei, and then you're able to burn it. So why don't we say, as soon as you're Mashiach Das, then you're allowed to, then you should be allowed to burn it. So some of the Mephoshim answer, because over there you're not actually Mashiach Das from it, because you still want to make sure it doesn't touch other things and make them Sofik Tomei. The whole point is, you want this barrel itself is Sofik Tomei. You want to make sure that no other food of Truma or Kodshim touches it and becomes Sofik Tomei as well. So therefore, you are going to keep it away from them. That's not Hesach Hadas then. Hesach Hadas would be if you're completely ignoring it. You're putting it outside because, like this, it was Sufik Tomei, and Rabbi Yeshua says you can put it outside, and that way it's more likely that it'll become Tomei. It's more likely, for example, a Sheretz will fall into it, and it'll become Vadei Tomei, and once it's Vadei Tomei, then you're able to do with it what you do with Truma Tomei. But it's still the reason why you can't, the reason why you have to wait for a Sheretz or whatever to fall in, rather than just saying, we have Hesach Hadas, we'll burn it right away. Mephoshim explain, is precisely because you don't have Hesach Hadas because you're trying to keep it away from other barrels, so it's not Matessa, so the contents of it are not Matami them as well. Yeah. Fine, but you're keeping it outside, but the point is it's not considered Hesach Hadas of that. Yeah. Okay. So, the Gemara has asked the question how Rav Sheshis's answer would work according to these two opinions. It would work according to Rish Lakish, but how would it work according to Rav Yechanan that it's only Psul Truma Havi? So the Gemara is meanwhile gonna, the Gemara is setting that issue aside. And eventually we're going to come up with a different answer about the truma that was planted. Why is it that it's still also for kohenim? But meanwhile, let's talk about this matter of Hesach Hadas. Eisved Reb Yechanan l'Reb Shimon Lakish. So Reb Yechanan says to Reb Shimon Lakish, you're telling me that it's a psul haguf. I have a stira to that. We learn We learn in a brisa, Rabbi Shmuel bno shel Rabbi Yechonon ben Kaima, lul katan hoya ben kevesh lamizbeach. There was a small trap door, or not really a trap door. Rashi says guma chalula. There was a small open hole in the floor of the Beis Mikdash, ben kevesh lamizbeach, between the ramp of the mizbeach and the mizbeach itself. There was a little space between them, as the Gemara tells us in Zvachim. There had to be, first of all, because the mizbeach has to be square, and if you have the kevesh directly attached to it, then it's not perfect. Square, and also because you have to have that when the Kohanim go up the ramp to throw the pieces of the Kohanim, to put the pieces of the Kohanim on the fire, they have to throw them. They're not allowed to just place them on. Madam Bizrika af Basa Bizrika, the blood has to be thrown on the Mizbeach, and we learn from a Hekesh and a Pasuk that the meat of it, the limbs of it have to also. So therefore, they have a little bit of a space between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach in order to force them to throw it. So in that space, on the floor where that space is, Bein Kevesh L'Mizbeach, B'ma'a Rovesh or Kevesh, but not actually really between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach, but rather on the west side of the Kevesh, in the floor we're talking about. What it is like this. The Kevesh was 16 Amos wide. The Mizbeach was 32 Amos wide. So that means on each side, the Mizbeach was 8 Amos wider than the Kevesh. So you have, therefore, So you have the Mizbeach, you have the Kevesh in front of it, and you have a space on one side and on the other side of the Kevesh where there's Mizbeach without Kevesh. So in that area, so corresponding to, if you drew a line from that, you'd get to the area, you'd get to the actual space between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach, but this is actually a little bit west of that. This is not underneath the Kevesh, but rather next to it on the west side of the Mizbeach. So there's a hole in the floor over there. There, if you had a chatas oif that became posel, then they would throw it in there. And the reason why they put it over there, Rashi explains, is because that corner of the mizbeach is where they would do the malika of the chatas oif. A chatas oif, the whole avoda of it is done on the bottom half of the mizbeach. So the kohen is standing there on the floor next to the mizbeach and doing the malika. If the bird became posel for any reason, then he would put it right there in that hole. It's right there next to his feet. Then you would have Ibur Tzura, which means they're left overnight. You have now their posel because of Lina. And then the next day they would burn them with other kodshim that became posel. In other words, the point is, now what are we talking about? Why do we need Ibur Tzura? As we're going to learn soon, we have a rule. There are certain kodshim that are posel that you can burn right away, and there are certain that you have to wait for ibur tzura. The basic rule is whether the psul happened to the korban itself, or whether there was some kind of side thing that happened to it that made it posel, as we're going to discuss in a minute. So if there was some kind of side thing, then you need ibur tzura. Rashi, by the way, is learning that Ibur Tzura, as we're saying, just means lina overnight, even if it doesn't spoil. Rabbeinu Hananel and some other Rishonim actually learned that Ibur Tzura means you have to leave it over there until it starts rotting away, until it's not considered baser anymore. Tzura means the form of it. So according to Rashi, lina of one night, which makes it possible now it's noiser, is enough to be considered Ibur Tzura. There's another opinion of it that Ibur Tzura means you have to actually let it rot. Whatever the case. So Rabbi Yechonon says to Rish Lakish like this. Now, when you put the chatas ha'oif in that, when you put the chatas ha'oif in that hole, that's hetzach hadas. Because you're at that point, you're not paying any attention to it anymore. So now, what happens? So, amet b'shlema psul trumahavi, if you say like me, that hesach hadas is not an actual psul itself. It's only because it might become tummy during that time. Mishum ha'ochi boi ibur tzura. Well, that explains why we need ibur tzura. Rashi explains like this. It's not a matter of putting it in the hole. What kind of psul are we talking about that happened to this bird anyway? That if we're talking about a psul where, for example, it was pigul, or it became tamei, or the malika wasn't done properly, etc., so then you don't need ibur tzura at all. As we're going to quote in a minute, the Mishnah that says that if there's a psul that's intrinsic to the korban itself, then you don't need ibur tzura. You can burn it right away on the spot. Only if it's something outside of the korban that made it psul, only then do you need ibur tzura. So what would be the case over here where you need ibur tzura? The only case where it would be possible, the pashtus, is where there's a suffix tumah. Wait, what? No, if it's missing a limb, then it's not suffix. Then that's a psul v'gufay. If it's missing a limb, then that's a psul v'gufay. Then you burn it right away. So that maybe it wouldn't even be considered kosher in that case because it wasn't even kosher for a korban in the first place. So maybe you wouldn't even need to. Whatever the case, the point is that most psulim that you can think of that would happen to a brewed korban are going to be the kind that you need to burn it right away. What would be a kind of case where you need where you can't be sure whether you can burn it right away would be where there's a suffix tumah. Well, no. If the korban became tamei, then That's a good point, actually. Well, okay, so maybe if the kohen became tamei doing it, maybe, okay. But the expression psul echafas oif suggests that the psul is somewhere in the chafas itself, not the... So the question is, so the only case where it seems where that would work is if there was a suffix tumah. So if you're going to tell me, So if you're going to tell me, Rosh Lakish, that the whole psul of Hesach Hadas is a psul aguf, well then all you need to do is you have Hesach Hadas, you put it in the hole, now you have a Hesach Hadas, so if you say it's a psul tumah, like I say, Mishum Hachi Boy Ibut Sura, that explains why we need Ibut Sura before we can burn it, Shema Yove Eliyo Vitarena, because in between Eliyo might come, tell us it wasn't in fact psul after all, we're not allowed to burn Kodshim that are Tahar, so therefore we have to put it in the hole until it has Ibut Surah. And then at that point, even if Eliyahu comes and tells us that it was Tahar, it doesn't matter, Ibut Surah already happened. Eli Amit Psulaguf, but if you, Rish Lakish, are telling me that Hesach Hadas is a Psulaguf, Lama Li Ibut Surah, then why do we even need Ibut Surah? According to you, just the fact that there was Hesach Hadas is enough to burn it right away. That should be considered a Psulaguf. But we learn in a Mishnah, Zaklal, the rule is, Kol shepsula bigufa, anything where the psul is in the body of the korban itself, for example, the meat of the korban became tamei, you sorif miyad, then you burn it right away. On the other hand, bedam over bailim, if the psul was in the blood of it, let's say the blood spilled, or the bailim, for example, let's say in the case of a korban pesach, the owner became tamei, and now the owners and the people who were going to eat it became tamei, now there's nobody to eat it. So then, to ubat surasan, the yotzin, the beis hasreifa, then you need ibut surah, and only then do you burn it. Now, Rashi explains, by the way, that even though when the blood spills, that's a complete psul, but after all, it's not like the flesh itself. Dam and basar are two different things, therefore it's still considered an external psul, and you need ibut surah. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying to Rish Lakish, so, in this case, if the bird became Sofik Tomei, and according to you, Hesach Hadas then is considered a Psul B'Gufay, so you don't need Ibut Surah, you put it in the hole, you have Hesach Hadas for a few minutes, and that's enough, then you can burn it right away. Why do you need Ibut Surah? You could still have a Sofik Tomei over there. Okay, nevertheless, though, the point is that still, to begin with, when the Kohen was doing the avoda with the bird, somehow afterwards there became a suffix tumma. Suffix, whether a shadow touched it, whatever. Yeah. So Omalei, so Rish Lakish answers, Hai Tana, Tana Dvei Rabba Barvohu, the Tana of that Braisa, is a Tana from the Yeshiva of Rabba Barvohu, to Omar, that he says, no, I feel a Pigul tone Ibut Surah. He says that no, even Pigul, which is a Psula Guf, you always need Ibut Surah. So therefore, in other words, so Rish Lakish says, that Mishnah that you're quoting at me, that meant that Braisa, rather, that you're quoting about the Lul, about the, they have to put in the psulik hafasalif, that would be only according to Rabba Barabua. You're right, according to everybody else, they wouldn't need to, because all, according to me, all they need is hesach hadas, and then they can burn it right away. Okay. Eisvei, so then Rabbi Yechanan says to Rish Lakish, I have another contradiction on you. We learn later on in our Masechta, Nitma, if the meat of the korban pesach, or whatever other korban, became tamei, oishin nifsal abasa, or it became posel, the difference between Tomei and Pasul we talked about before. Tomei would be, for example, Rishin Latoma, Sheni Latoma, whatever. Pasul would be Shlishi Latoma, rather Revi Latoma, where it's Pasul but it can't be Matame anything else. Or if the meat was taken outside the courtyard of the Bismikdash, we're not talking about the Korban Pesach, we're talking about other Korbanas that have to stay inside, for example, a Chatas or an Ashram, which are Kodshim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yizrik, Rabbi Eliezer says you can still sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach, because as we've learned before, and as we're going to learn in more detail later in the Masechta, Rabbi Eliezer holds that even if the flesh of the korban is tamei, you can still sprinkle the blood. Dam afa pishein baser. Rabbi Yeshua Omer lo Yizrik. Rabbi Yeshua says you shouldn't, because he says im ein baser ein dam. If there's no meat available, then there's nothing to sprinkle the blood for. However, Rabbi Yeshua would agree that b'di'evet, if you did sprinkle the blood, then hurtza, then it becomes acceptable. Then the korban becomes acceptable. Now Rashi learns that we're not even talking about. Now we have the concept that we've learned before, and again we're going to learn in more detail later in the Masechta, that sometimes you say that tzitz is miratza for a korban that otherwise would have been possible, and the fact that the tzitz exists, or that the Kohen Gadol was wearing it, is machshir the korban b'dieved. Rashi learns that here we're not talking about the tzitz, because one of the things we mentioned was that the meat was taken outside the azara. The tzitz doesn't help with that. The tzitz only helps with matters of tumah. So Rashi learns that we just mean hurtza in the sense that the korban is kosher b'dieved. Tosfos learns that actually Rabbi Yeshua might hold like an opinion of Rabbi Akiva that even though the meat was taken out, if the blood was sprinkled, it helps to take away me'ilah, and therefore in this case that it makes the korban kosher b'di'evin. Whatever the case, so when we say that the korban became posel, we said nifsal abasar, my nifsal la behesach hadas. Papashtus, the word nifsal means the papashtus nifsal. What other kind of psul could we be talking about? Tomei, we already said. Yotza, we already said. So what other kind of psul would there be? Now, if it was something where there was a psul in the blood, for example, of chutz lesmane, chutz lemakoyme, then that wouldn't be considered nifsal basar. And then it's nifsal dam. Then Rabbi Eliezer can't be saying you would sprinkle it. If Rabbi Eliezer is talking about that you're still going to sprinkle the blood, obviously the blood is fine. There was no psul in it. The psul was only in the meat. Once you have nitma and yatza, what other psul could there be? Lav v'hesach hadas. Presumably it would be the psul of hesach hadas. So, iyamet v'shlema psul turma havi. If you say that hesach hadas is psul only on the grounds of that it might have become tome, as Rabbi Yechon is saying, hainu de mashkachas le'lo de merati tzitz, then that explains why the tzitz can help to be merati, because that's the job of the tzitz. That's what it does, is when you have a korban that became tome, even though you really shouldn't sprinkle the blood, but for d'yebed, if you did, then the tzitz is merati. But if you say that it's a psula guf like you, amai hurtza tzitz, then we're amai hurtza actually. So why is it hurtza even b'di'eved? Forget about the tzitz, Rashi says, because again the tzitz is not factoring in over here if it was yotze, because the tzitz only helps for tumah. But the point is, if you're going to tell me, so then it shouldn't help. So it shouldn't help for the psula of hesach hadas either. So therefore, the Braisa seems to be implying that even though nifsal abasar, the tzitz can still help. So how would that be? If you're saying that hesach hadas is a separate psul of its own, nothing to do with tumah, then how is the tzitz helping for that, or how is anything helping for that? A psul is a psul. So the answer is, Rosh Lakish can answer, my nifsal b'tvuyon. You're right. You know what? The word nifsal in the Braisa does not mean that it became possible as hesach hadas. It's true. Hesach hadas, I say, says Rosh Lakish, that it would be a psul, it would be an intrinsic psul. It's a psul of its own. A psul aguf habi. And therefore, there's no way to make this korban kosher. What are we talking about? Nifsal means nifsal b'tvuyon. Means if it's tvuyon touched it, like we said before. And therefore, it became a revi'i l'truma. So it's not tomei in the sense that it can be metamei other things, but it's possible in the sense that it itself is not allowed to be eaten. So the question is, yehochi hainu tomei, isn't that the same thing as tomei in effect? The answer is trei gavni tomei. Okay, you have two different kinds. The Braisa wanted to specify two different kinds: one where it can be metamei others, and the other one where it itself is tomei, but it can't be metamei others. So the Shlokish would say therefore that there's no contradiction from that case. From that case to me, who says that hesach hadas is psul aguf, because in fact the braisa is not talking about hesach hadas at all. It's talking about a different kind of psul. Okay, so the Gemara stops the discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish at that point about Hesach Hadas. This was all a digression from we were talking about the case of the truma that was planted, where we gave an answer that once you plant the truma tmeya, then you have a Hesach Hadas, and that led us into this discussion. Now we're going to go back to that discussion. The original discussion was that we had a Mishnah that said that if you plant truma tmeya, it's still osur. So what does it mean osur? If it means it's osur to koyanim as well, then why how does the truma still continue to exist after it was planted? The same way as the truma went away, the same way the issur of truma tmeya for koyanim should go away. And if you say that it just means it's osur lazorim, then there's not really, we argued there's not much of a chiddush in it. And if you're going to tell me that it's psul of hesach hadas, then that works only according to the shlokish, not according to the b'yechanan. So now continuing that discussion. The Gemara tells, Ki Solik Ravin, when Ravin went up from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, Amra l'shmaita kameh de Rabbi Yirmiyah. He told over this discussion to Rabbi Yirmiyah, this that Rav Sheshes had said before, that the psul is because of Hesach Hadas. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, Bavloi tipshoi, foolish people from Babel, Mishum de Yasvi ba'ara de Hashoicha, because they live in a dark land, because Babel is very low-lying, Amritun Shmaitse de Bechashku. Therefore, you say dark statements, like you say statements that don't really make any sense of the Alocha. Rabbi Yirmiyah himself, by the way, was from Babel. The Gemara mentions Rabbi Yirmiyah, when he was in Babel, he was not one of the top caliber of Chachamim, but then he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machim, and he became great, and he became one of the great Amiroyim over there. So you find in a number of places in the Gemara where he puts down Babel, because he had his own personal experience that in Babel, you don't necessarily grow to your full capacity. The Rambam actually mentions, I think, in one of his Trubas, that there were different times within the time of the Amoraim itself, there were times when they were learning Torah on a much higher level in Babel than Eretz Yisrael, because in Eretz Yisrael you had Xeris, persecutions, and Shmodes, and all kinds of problems. But then you had times, such as the time of Rabbi Yirmiyah, when it was the other way around, when they were having a harder time of it in Babel than they were in Eretz Yisrael, because there was a period over there. There was a period over there when there was a new. And we were talking about yesterday in the history class that there was a period there. There was a new dynasty in Babel, and for the first little bit, they were very fanatical about their religion and very anti-Semitic. We had something about it briefly in Shabbos. Eventually, they calmed down and became more favorable to Jews, but still you had times when, and on the other hand, during that time in Eretz Yisrael, the Romans and their empire were dealing with one emperor after another was getting assassinated and overthrowing the previous one, and they had no time to harass the Yidden. So there was a period of time over there when things were better in Eretz Yisrael than in Babel. That was the time we learned about, we had a Gemara, for example. Rabbi Yodel. Thank you. So the Gemara tells in Gittin where one time where Rabbi Baba Chana says better we should be if you're not going to have us under your direct protection because we're in Golos, better we should be in Golos by the Romans than by the Persians, because at that point the Romans were better for the Jews than the Persians for that period of history. So I'm right that Rabbi Yirmiyah could have been talking during that time. Whatever the case, anyway, he says never mind Rav Sheshes's answer about because of Hesach Hadas. There's another reason why this Truma Tmeya that was planted is still osur. Haven't you in Babel heard what Rav Shlokish said in the name of Rav Oshia? The water that's going to be, that you're going to be doing nisuch hamayim on Sukkos. If they became tamei. So now, when it comes to water specifically, there's a way of making water tahor that you can't with any other food or drink. You can do hashaka, which is you take the container of water, you dip it in a mikveh so that the water of the mikveh just barely touches the water inside the container. And then the water in the container is considered bottle to the water of the mikveh. It's called ashoka, and therefore it becomes tahor. So, he shikon v'achakach ikdishon. Now, what you have like this, they fill up the water from the shiloyach spring. They don't yet put it in a kli shoreis. They only put it in a kli shoreis afterwards when they're getting ready to do the nisuch hamayim. In particular, the Mishnah tells us in Sukkah that if when it comes Shabbos during Sukkahs, then they would put it in a container that's not one of the kli shoreis over Shabbos, because otherwise it'll become possible with lina. Otherwise, it's possible by the next morning. So they would put it in the bis mikdash. They'd put it in the bis mikdash in a keli that's not a kli shoreis. And then the next morning, they'd pour it into the kli shoreis and pour it on the mizbeach. Once you have Kodshim in a Klisharis, then yes, that makes it that now, if they're left overnight, they're going to become possible, right? With certain rare exceptions of the Shulchan, for example, you have Lechem upon him on it for a week, but ordinarily, something is in a Klisharis, it becomes possible with Lina, yeah. So over here, what you have is then, you filled up the water from the Shiloyach, it's not yet in the Klisharis, so it's not yet Hikdishan in the sense of Kedushas HaGuf, where now it has this Din of Lina, so Hishikon, so if it became Tomei, and you did Hashoka, V'achakach Hikdishan, then you were Makdish it, then you put it in the Klisharis, Tahodin, then it's Tahor, and you can pour it on the Mizbeach, Hikdishan V'achakach Hikshikon, but if you were first Makdish it by putting it in the Klisharis, and then you did Hashoka, Tmeim, then they still remain Tomei, and you can't pour them on the Mizbeach. The mikveh doesn't help, in other words. So therefore, now let's consider, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, Mechti, let's consider, Zriyaninu. Why not what? Because, so the reason is, because we're going to be talking about in a sugi over here, it's called Mila Osu. There are certain things with Truma and with Kodshim, as now we're going to be discussing, where we say that even though technically something might work in Dinim of Truma Vatara, but because we're dealing with Kodshim or with Truma, therefore we have a special Mila that it doesn't work. Here, once it has Kedushas HaGuf, that it was put in the Klisharis, then we say that Hashoka is not going to help for it. Now, he says, Mechti Zriyaninu. After all, Hashoka is functionally the equivalent of planting it. The same way you plant Truma in the ground and it loses its status, and now it becomes bottle to the ground. The same way you put water into the mikveh and it becomes bottled to the mikveh water. Mali heshikon v'achakach hikdishon, mali hikdishon v'achakach heshikon. So why would it matter whether you were makdish it in the klisharis before or after you did hashoka? Alma ein zriya lehekdish. Obviously the answer is that when it comes to hekdish, mila also bekodshim. So therefore, the fact that you did zriya, the fact that you did hashoka, doesn't help. Hachanami ein zriya letruma. The same thing. Rabbi Yemiya says you don't need all these doichkim that we had before about the truma tmeya that was planted. The reason why it doesn't change its status, even though yeah, it takes away the truma in the sense that it's not matame, other food, but it itself still remains truma tmeya, because mila also the truma, because the chacham made a mila when it comes to truma, that planting it is not going to change its status. Okay. So since we're talking about that, since we're talking about this matter of being makdish the water, so Yosef Rav Dimi, the ka'amala, la hoshmaita, Rav Dimi was sitting and saying over this statement of Rav Yemiya, Amalei Abaya, so Abaya asked him, what do we mean by hikdishan? Now we just explained that hikdishan means you put them in a klisharis, but he didn't actually specify what that means. Now we know there's different stages in making something hektish. You have first this kedushas peh, where you verbally say this is designated for hektish. Later on, you have kedushas aguf when you put it in a klisharis. So which one are we talking about over here? Amalei Abaya, hikdishan b'kli karma. Do we mean once the water was placed in the kli shares, then it's too late to do ashoka for it? Avo b'peh, but if you just were makdish it verbally, loy over rabbanon mila, did the rabbanon not make the mila over there, and therefore you could do hashoka with this water and it would be fine? Odoma b'peh nami, over rabbanon mila, or maybe even once they said verbally, this is for nisach hamayim, maybe that's enough already to make it that you can't do hashoka. Amalei, so Rav Dimi answers, Zuloi Shamaiti. I didn't hear anything from Rav Yirmiyah or from any other of my other Rebbeim explicitly about that, but Kayotze Bashamaiti, but I heard something similar where we can learn from that to this. And here's where we circle back to something that we learned before. To Amar Abahu Amar Rav Yechanan, Anovim Shenikmu, we said on Lamad Gimel Lamad Beis that if grapes became Tomei, we didn't say this exact thing, but we had a similar case with grapes that became Tomei, and we said you squeeze out liquids from them. Soon, actually, we're going to quote the original statement of Rabbi Yechanan that we had on Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, but right now we have a different statement of Rabbi Yechanan. If you have grapes that became Tomei, Dorchan v'achakach kedishon, if you squeeze them and then you makdish them, tahorim, then they're tahor, and therefore the juice that comes out of them is tahor for nesachim, because as we learned before, Rabbi Yechanan holds that the juice is not considered to be embedded in the flesh of the, it's not mivlabli, it's mifkad pkidi, it's as if it's in a container over there, so therefore when the grapes became tamei, the liquid did not, therefore it's good. On the other hand, kedishon v'achakach dorchan, but if you were first makdish them and then you squeeze them, then they're tamei. Now, says Rav Dimi, v'hanavim kedushas peh ninu, grapes themselves only have kedushas peh. Grapes can never have kedushas aguf, because you don't bring grapes themselves on the mizbeach, you only bring wine on the mizbeach. Nevertheless, we see that Rabbanan made a mila. So yes, the answer is that in the same thing with the water of Nisach HaMayim, just kedushas peh, just saying this water is being designated for Nisach HaMayim is enough to make that the Mila should kick in, and therefore that you can't do Ashoka with it anymore. However, Amar Rav Yosef, but Rav Yosef says that's not a valid proof. Anovim Kamret, you're talking about grapes. That's a different case. Hochaba Anovim Shal Truma Askinan. There you're talking about, it's not Stam grapes of Cholin. You're talking about grapes of Truma. When we say Dishon, we're not talking about you machdish them to Hektish. We're talking about you machdish them as Truma. You're designating them as Truma. Well then, Drushas Ped did who? Drushas Kli Damya. Saying that it's Truma is the equivalent of putting it in a Kli Shores, because when it comes to Kodshim, yeah, you have the different stages over there. First you say this should be Kodshim, then you put it in a Kli Shores. Truma, you don't have that. Truma, as soon as you say this is Truma, that's it. There's nothing further to be done with it. So therefore, once you say these grapes are Truma, automatically that means, so that's the equivalent of Kedushas HaGuf. Sure, that's why we would say the Mila applies. How are you comparing that? Avalhani, the boy Kli, here, where ultimately it's not good enough to say the water is going to be Hektish, you actually have to put it in a Kli Shodas, the Pele Obed Rabbanan Mila. Maybe Rabbi Yosef says you could argue that just if you said it verbally, then the Chachamim didn't make the Mila yet, only when you actually put it in the Kli Shodas. So there's no solid proof for that. Okay. So the Gemara asks, now getting back to, we just said, Rabbi Yochanan said, if you squeeze these grapes, it depends whether it's before you, after you amachdish them, whether the juice will be tahor. What do you mean? Vafilu tova? Do you mean that you'll be able to squeeze even a lot at a time? Did Rabbi Yochanan say that? We learned before, here's where we get to what we learned on Daf Lamed Gimel, anovim shenitmu, grapes that became tamei, dorchan pochas mekabetza. You can only squeeze them less than a kabetza at a time, because that way we said, since you need a kabetza of food to be matame other food, then the grapes will not be able to be matame the juice because you have less than a kabetza over there. So what is Rabbi Yochanan just saying over here that you can squeeze these grapes and without specifying how many you can squeeze at a time? So the answer is, first of all, you both say hachanami pachas pachas mekabetza. One answer is very simple. Here also, where Rabbi Yochanan is making the distinction between whether you're squeezing them before or after you amakdish them, is also talking about you're squeezing less than a kabetza. He didn't specify, but he expected us to know what he said before, and that it applies over here also. Or another answer, you could say the difference is that the previous case was that the grapes touched a rishon l'truma, so therefore they're a sheni l'truma, and therefore you have to do less than a kabetza at a time, because otherwise the sheni l'truma will make the juice be a shlishi l'truma, and then you can't eat it as truma, and then you certainly can't use it for nesachim. Here we're talking about grapes of truma that touch the sheni. They themselves are a shlishi. Fine, a shlishi can't do anything more as far as truma. The furthest you go by truma is shlishi. So therefore, there's no problem. You could squeeze even more than a kabeta together because the juice is not going to become tame from it. It is not going to become tame from it anyway. So if you made them as grapes of truma already, then we say mila also but truma, and then we would say the juice does become tame anyway. But if they were still grapes of chulin, then you don't have that issue. Okay. Amar Rava. So now Rava says, since we're talking about mila, we're saying that there are certain cases where the chachamim made milas in truma and kodshim. Here's another example. The Gemara is going to now give a couple of other examples where we see that the chachamim made milas. So once we say that, then yes, we can apply that also to the case of the water of the nisach hamayim. We can also apply that to the original subject of the sugya, which is the truma that became tame and then you planted it. We can say that midaraisa, it wouldn't be considered truma or let alone truma tame anymore, but midarabanan, we would say my lawsuit. So afanan nami tenena, we learn in connection with the water for the paradruma. The pasuk says v'nasan olav mayim chayim okeli. You put together with the ashes, you put living water, meaning water from a spring, into a keli. And the word chayim el keli means shetei chayusin l'kli. It means it has to be that the same keli that you fill up the water in is where you makadish by putting the ashes in. You can't fill up in one container and then pour it into another. Chayusa, in other words, the livingness of it, still has to be directly into the keli. And then the pasuk continues with nosan. However, the pasuk says with nosan that you should place alma tlushin ninu. So we see Now, the pasuk, on the other hand, seems to be implying that the water can be tolosh, that you can take the water in one container and then pour it into another. So what do you mean? We just said it has to be connected. We said you have to fill up directly into the container itself. Ela maila. So no, the answer is, midrabanan was saying shetecha yosin b'kli. The words chayim el keli that we're learning it from is an asmachta. But really, midaraisi would be allowed to fill up in one keli and then pour it into another. Midrabanan was saying not. So we see there's an example where the chama made a maila. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. Tosfos says it's a doichik, because that has nothing to do with tumah v'tahara, that's to do with a special din that applies to parah drumah water, whether we say chayim el keli or whether we say v'nasan. So rather, Tosfos says that what we're talking about is, as far as being the kabel tumah, even if the water is still attached to the spring, you're in the middle of filling up the water from the spring, and we're still saying it's able to become tumah, that we treat it as though it was tloshin, that shows, maila also, that shows that hashoka doesn't work when it comes to water for the parah drumah, and similarly for kodshim, as we said before. So that's the point, that's the connection, in other words, that's the connection, the same way as we said before. That once the water is designated for Nisach HaMayim, or poured into the Kli Sharis, whatever, then you can't do Hashoka on it anymore. The same thing over here. You're filling up water for the Parah Adumah. If it becomes Tameh, then Hashoka is not going to help, even though it's still attached. Because the Pasuk considers it as if it was detached. And that's an example of a Maila. Okay, Amar of Shimi Ba'ashi, Afanan Nami Tanena. Here's another example where we see that Maila also. We learn in a Mishnah, Tova of Allah, if a person was Tomei, and he tovled and came out of the mikveh, oichel b'mais, so now at that point he's able to eat mais hasheni, head of shimshay, once he has head of shemesh, oichel b'truma, then he's allowed to eat truma, implying b'truma ein b'kod shimloi. Now at that point he's only allowed to eat truma, but if he's a mechusar kapara, if he's a zava, a yeledes, etc., then he still needs to bring his korban before he can eat kodshim. Now why? Why not? Amai tahuru. Isn't he tahuru at this point? He did everything as far as tahara that he needs. Elamaila. Obviously the answer is the maila. Hachanami Maila, the same thing we can answer over here, the Maila when it comes to Kodshim. Now, this that a Mechusa Kapara can't eat Kodshim may be something Daraisa. That itself is a Machloikas. So if we say it's Daraisa, then it means that even Daraisa we see sometimes the Maila to Kodshim over Truma. If we say it's Darabanan, then okay, it means here's another example where the Chum made a Maila of Truma over Kodshim. Amar Rav Ashi Afanan Nami Tanena, and Rav Ashi says here's a third example. When you see that there's a maila regarding the dinim of tumah v'tahara when it comes to kodshim, a braisa says that when the pasuk says v'habaser, we've dealt with this pasuk before in the first parak. You have a pasuk that says v'habaser ashiyiga b'chol tameh, if meat of kodshim touches anything that became tameh lo ya'achol, it can't be eaten. And then the pasuk continues v'habaser and the meat kol tohor yechabaser. Anybody who's tohor can eat the meat. So we learn from that second v'habaser. Or Rashi says we learn from the extra vav, l'rabbis is the eitzim of levoina. It comes to include that wood and levoina, even though those are not food, if they're wood of kodshim or levoina of kodshim, then they're able to become tamei. Now, why should that be? Eitzim levoina b'nei tamuyan inu. Are such things able to become tamei? Ela maila. That's another example of it being a maila. Hochanami maila. The same thing over here. We can answer the chum made an extra maila. Now, again, we're bringing from a pasuk. Does that mean that it is actually daraisa, and it is actually, and therefore we're saying that we're saying therefore that we have an example of a maila daraisa, and the same thing chum can make one zirabonon, or is it that even this concept that eitzim levoina can become tame itself is zirabonon, and the limud from b'habaser is only an asmachta? So you have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos and Rambam about that question, whether this matter of this concept is called chibas hakodesh. We touched on it in the first paragraph where we say that chibas hakodesh allows us to consider things that are not able to be makabel tuma, usually that they're able to be makabel tuma because of the preciousness of kodshim. So is that concept daraisa or zirabonon? Rashi and Tosfos argue on that. One possibility that Ramban says as sort of a middle ground, maybe what it is the fact that they can become Tomei is Daraisa, but the fact that they don't need Hechsher to be Makabal Tuma, the fact that they don't have to become wet with one of the Shiva Mashkim, maybe that part is Darabanan. Be that as it may, we see that there are milas when it comes to Kodshim. We see that even though the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara generally apply across the board to everything, Kodshim and Cholin and Truma, but nevertheless we see that there are exceptions where they apply on a higher level to Kodshim or to Truma, and therefore we can answer that, yes, the case of the Truma Tmeya that you planted could also be an example of Myla like that. We don't need to resort to the answers that it's only also to Zarim. We don't need to resort to the answer of Hesa Hadas, because we said that only works according to Rish Lakish. We can say it's a special Myla that applies to Truma, that even though you planted it, it still retains its status as Truma Tmeya. And therefore that's also to Zarim. Oh, that's also to Koyanim as well, actually, because it's Truma Tmeya, yeah. Okay. Shkoyach, everyone.